Hey everyone, Michael here with the Bitcoin Way podcast. I appreciate you tuning in. Today on the show, we have my friend, my colleague, Rick Messett. We talk about his story, we talk about everything that happened over the last 11 years in Bitcoin, how he and his dad lost it all just a little bit over a year ago. It's a heartbreaking story, but one of redemption, and nobody tells it better than the man himself, Rick. I think you will really, really enjoy this one. Hey, everyone. Like I said in the intro, I've got Rick Messett with me today. Rick, welcome to the Bitcoin Way podcast.
Thanks, Michael. Good to see you again.
Good to see you, man. Hey, this is going to be a fun one. Interesting. I think there's so many things that people are going to learn from your story. We'll get to that in a moment. But as I've learned more about you, working with you at the Bitcoin Way, one of the things that's struck me is it seems like a lot of your beliefs that we talk about on Bitcoin Banter, we talk about privately behind the scenes, are deep rooted, like sort of your libertarianism, free market, I'll call it anti-statist positions were formed over a long period of time. Could you, before we get to your Bitcoin story, why don't you talk a little bit about where those beliefs came from, who influenced them, maybe explain what exactly you believe in some of these large, broad domains.
Yeah, I mean, listen, like, I wouldn't say I'm the best, like, political commentator or anything like that. You know, I wouldn't be able to properly lay out, you know, the strongest arguments for libertarianism or anything like that. My set of beliefs really come from my upbringing more than anything else. And stem largely from my dad. So my dad's story is a fascinating one. He was actually, he was born outside of wedlock in Ireland, right around the time where that was really not acceptable. There's some incredible documentaries about this stuff, but long story short, he ended up in a poorhouse, right? Which is not a place you wanted to be back then. You know, in one of these sort of orphanages. Anyway, he ends up getting adopted by someone else in the family, brought over to London, where unfortunately, like, his father died while he was quite young. And, you know, his mum was busy working. They didn't have a lot of money. But my dad is, he's quite an intrepid guy. He just gets stuck into stuff. And, you know, he taught himself computer programming. He used to jump on the tube when he was 7 years old in London and go down and watch Chelsea matches all by himself. I think he probably had to learn a lot of life's lessons, maybe a little bit solo, right? You know, his experience always taught him that, you know, if you want to go after something and get something, you have to do it. So I guess he was never really a recipient of any handouts or certainly any help from the state. And I don't know, I guess my dad figured out long before I was born that fiat money was a bit of a scam, right? Because he's a very logical thinker, which is why he had headed down the software development route. The best way I could explain it to you is my dad's the kind of person who would look at something like fiat money and see it like an equation that doesn't balance, right? It doesn't fundamentally make sense. You know, how can the debt be larger than the total money supply? This is kind of crazy, right? Like the whole thing is some unbalanced thing, which sent him down the right rabbit holes. And I guess drew him to things like precious metals. And he understood the problem of inflation and printing money like early on. So he's always had this healthy distrust of the government and big banks. And, you know, I grew up in that environment. He's also an entrepreneur. He's always worked for himself and built his own businesses. So I guess you could say in a loose way, he was maybe living a sort of self-sovereign lifestyle before, you know, all of this new technology came about. You know, he'd always be trying to do things for himself, didn't ever ask for any handouts from the state and sort of dragged himself up. So he always encouraged me very strongly to think for myself, right? He was not interested necessarily whether I drew the correct conclusions to things, but that at least I drew my own conclusions, right? So I was probably a difficult student to teach at school because I'd be the kid who'd stick his hand up and say, well, you know, I'm not actually convinced that is the way it works. And, you know, it would always be, well, my dad taught me about that and he said it actually works like this and that sort of thing. And all credit to him, that served me really well throughout my whole life. Just that ability to stop and think, does this make sense to me? Even if I'm not an expert in whatever field we're talking about, does that logically follow for me and does it make sense for me? So, yeah, you know, we naturally just fell into Bitcoin early. because it just ticks all the right boxes, right? It solves the money problem. It's uncensorable. We can send money without asking anybody's permission. It can't be debased. I'm not going to run through all the great things about Bitcoin. People already know that. But that's why for us, it was exciting and felt natural that we'd want a money that was separate from the state.
Do you remember, like, how did you hear about Bitcoin? What was the first, when did it first come to your attention? And how quickly did you sort of go all in?
Oh, so fast. I can't remember the exact instance, but I know it will have been my dad who introduced it to me. Just from, you know, he researches a lot of crazy things. He goes down a lot of rabbit holes, right? So all I can really remember from the early days is quickly after we found it and got interested into it, we were spending hours and hours on end on the phone every day for months and months on end. The obsession was instant, right? And thorough. Oh man, it feels like a lifetime ago. It really does. Like, I can even picture the bedroom I was in at the time. You know, like, it was probably, I was not long out of university, you know, in my first sort of house share with a bunch of other guys and stuff. And I'm just constantly on the phone in my room to my dad, like, going through all this stuff, getting all them excited. Some of those boys in that flat share ended up doing quite well because of my dad's obsession as well. But yeah, that's where we went. And we went all in quite quickly. I mean, I say all in, we became obsessed. We didn't start selling our houses and stuff back then. You know, Bitcoin was less than $100. So it all just felt like a magical dream. But we were excited, very excited.
And were your first Bitcoin purchased on Mt. Gox? Because I know that's going to tie into your story here in a bit. Was that really the only place back then? I wasn't around, so.
Oh man, the thing that has me really kicking myself is back then there were like Bitcoin faucets. Have you heard of those?
Yeah.
Oh,
five Bitcoin just handed to you.
Don't even, right? Even 0.1, right? The value of the number of Bitcoins you get from a faucet steadily just always went down. But even half a Bitcoin, right? Back then, like, I can't remember. It's more than 10 years ago, man. But I'm sure at certain points I'd look at a faucet and be like, oh God, I'm not going to bother and sit there and fill out captures all day for that amount of Bitcoin. Whereas now, yeah, you do a hell of a lot of it. But buying Bitcoin, that was relatively painful. I mean, I'm not sure we were necessarily doing it the best way back then, but yeah, Mt. Gox was really the only exchange available that I was aware of. And oh man, you should Google and go and look at screenshots of the user interface, right? It's really quite funny. It looks so antiquated and old and sort of held together with glue and, you know, compared to modern exchanges, a totally different experience. And for us back then, Mt. Gox, I don't think didn't work with pounds. So we had to swap our pounds into euros. I think we used things like, you know, TransferWise or Revolut, something like that. And then we'd have to go and get like whatever it was, the IBAN or whatever for the bank that was owned by Mt. Gox. And you'd have to include little reference messages, not totally dissimilar to now. That you'd be firing off to this random bank in Estonia, I think was their bank, right? So like, I couldn't tell you a lot about Estonia, right? So as far as I'm concerned back then, I'm just sending money into who knows where, and you're sitting there hoping that it appears on this interface and buying our coins. Yeah. So yeah, weird experience back then buying on Mt. Gox. And, yeah, we were lucky actually that we didn't get caught up in its explosion, right? We were smart enough to take our coins off the exchange. But yeah, it was the Wild West back then, man. It was kind of nuts.
Crazy times, man. Okay, so Mt. Gox collapsed. They were hacked. A lot of Bitcoin stolen. You all had already exited Mt. Gox. You didn't keep your coins on the exchange. That's the first thing you did right. Why don't you tell the story of what happened back? What was it, late 2023, fall of 2023?
Yeah. So, yeah, I found out not most recent November, the year before. So November 2023 was about the time I found out that, unfortunately, I'd been hacked. But if we rewind a bit to the Mt. Gox hack, I'm fairly convinced, based on everything that I've learned since getting hacked and losing my funds, is that it's the details of me and my dad, every, you know, our address details, where we lived, every withdrawal we'd ever made, every Bitcoin address we'd ever used, was all also stolen in the hack when Mt. Gox lost all its coins. So, look, you know, we got the first bit right, which was every time we bought Bitcoin, we would take it off the exchange into self-custody. So, yeah, that was a good strategy. And it meant that when Mt. Gox got hacked, we were fine. Unfortunately, we never really accounted for the fact that maybe our details would get leaked in that hack. And, you know, years and years went past, right? And we didn't think of it. And we had our Bitcoin and everything was cushy. And wow, you know, you go through, what, 3 bear markets? I can't tell you how many exchanges exploded, influencers that have shown up and then vanished into the ether. I don't know, for people who've been around a while, I don't know if they remember that one influencer who became a crypto guy and then a rapper. And I mean, it's very similar to the influencers we have today, Michael. But what I can tell you is, like, you go through cycles, you'd be amazed how quickly influencers become hugely popular and then kind of vanish, normally due to some shit coining or whatever. So wow, I mean, we lived through, you know, those bear markets were brutal enough, right? Even when you have your Bitcoin, you know, so it was a tumultuous ride. But, you know, we'd done our homework, right? We'd read all the books. We were lucky enough to be interested in Bitcoin before it was valuable. So actually, we probably spent a bit more time learning the fundamentals than most people who came later during the hypes and the manias, right? But yeah, you know, ultimately, after sort of 10 long years of hodling and dreaming about what might be, me and my dad, we decided to go on a bit of a victory tour over to El Salvador. Man, it was crazy. You know, we were kind of celebrating hodling for 10 years. El Salvador was, of course, extremely interesting to us. Let's go and check it out. And man, I mean, it's like a Netflix movie. I can't even... You know, I'm a bit more detached from it now than I was the first time I explained it, but man, you can't even write it, you know. We went to the Adopting BTC conference. We got all fired up because, you know, we'd seen all these great projects and things people were building. So, you know, we went back, opened our laptops, all excited. We'd been building a little app for ourselves for a while, started trying to send some test transactions around, and boom, within, you know, 30 seconds, realizing, yeah, look, all that Bitcoin, every single sap, you know, they didn't leave $500, you know, they took every single last sap out of every single wallet that we controlled, and poof, it was gone. And I wish I could put into words how that felt. It's like the biggest hit of adrenaline and anger and frustration, and also a massive amount of disbelief, right? You just cannot possibly be true. You know, for 10 years, I'd seen every story on Twitter, every hack. You know, you remember people like Luc Dachier, you know, he lost his 200 Bitcoins or whatever. And I don't know, you kind of have this mentality, oh, it'll never happen to me. And boy, when it does, it really kind of lands on you like a ton of bricks. So That's kind of the story. You know, I could maybe go into more detail about, you know, the weaknesses of our setup. Here's the bottom line. We took our Bitcoin off the exchange. Good idea. And we wanted to keep our seed phrase safe, which is a natural thing to do. The mistake we made, I mean, back then, you know, there weren't metal plates, weren't popular, you know, we didn't really, I mean, straight up, my dad's a software developer, I'm a sales and marketing guy, but neither of us are really security experts who've ever given any thought to securing critical data, not seriously. So we did what we thought was sensible. We secured the seed in an open source password manager. You know, we weren't using any third parties or centralized services, but obviously, we don't want to lose those files. So they're encrypted. We backed them up to the cloud. And the thing that caught us out is something I'll kick myself about forever, which was the encryption was just too weak. on the password to the cloud storage and on the password to the KeePass file that contained the seed. So let's bring this full circle back to the thing we were talking about with Mt. Gox leaking our user details. My best theory is that, look, someone's targeted us because there is information floating around on the dark web that says these people own, you know, a reasonable sum of Bitcoin here. So we're an attractive target. Our mistake was weak passwords on our cloud storage, and also our encrypted files weren't encrypted well enough. And I think those two things have joined together. Someone's targeted us and unfortunately got in and cleaned us out. It might not be related to the Mt. Gox, you know, KYC info, but I mean, the alternative story would be that some hacker just got incredibly lucky and couldn't believe his luck when he opened this file to find these seed phrases and check the wallet. I mean, it could be like that. I don't know, but I think KYC played a fairly big role in catching up to us, and our own security was the nail in the coffin, really.
So I don't know your dad, but I, for some reason, I imagine him to be like a calm, collected kind of person. I don't know if that's, if that would be a fair assessment, obviously, but what was his response to all this? How did he react? How did he take it?
Man, like a champ. My dad, he is very logical. Like, he's your sort of stereotypical, software engineer. Right. Kind of, he almost thinks in binary code, like ones and zeros. Right. So listen, I'm sure it affected him quite savagely, mainly because, you know, my money was in there. His money was in there. Some other family members had money in there as well. So I would imagine that sort of burden of responsibility, you know, felt quite bad. But at the same time, you know, I was quick to explain to him that the thing I learned was, look, I relied on my dad more because he's more techie than me, right? He's a software developer. He understands this stuff a lot, lot better than I do. And it seemed like the logical thing that was his area of expertise. But now I realize as well that, well, you know, Bitcoin really teaches you responsibility. And, you know, I shouldn't have just put that whole responsibility to look after all of that money on him. I mean, in realistic terms as well, you know, my dad's not going to live forever, right? So at some point, you know, it's on me. I got to learn these skills for myself. And that's true of absolutely everybody who wants to interact with Bitcoin, right? Like, I wasn't outsourcing my security to an exchange, but I wasn't taking any personal responsibility over it either. And had I done so, you know, there's a very good chance that we'd have had the right conversations and sat down and said, hang on, this setup's not strong enough. Like, we need to think of a better solution here. But look, you know, my dad's really kind of stoic person, right? Like, you almost might think he wasn't phased at all. But I think what's maybe true of both of us is we've both been entrepreneurs like our whole life, right? We also held through three Bitcoin bear markets. We always have kind of forged our own path in life, and we've probably both had our fair shares of wins and losses over the years. So I don't know, maybe that made us relatively well equipped to deal with it and stuff like that. But no, he's doing fine. He's all good.
Good. Did you, throughout the year, so you guys held through, you said three cycles, which is, it's interesting to me because I think I hear people talking about like, don't sell. It's hard, you know, yeah, it's hard to hold onto your Bitcoin when you see the price pumping. And like, that just doesn't even resonate with me. Like, it has literally never crossed my mind in the few years that I've been in Bitcoin to sell. Was it more tempting back, you know, in the early days of Bitcoin because you'd see a pump and you'd like the idea of $100,000 Bitcoin probably felt a long ways off, if ever achievable. Or was there something that, I guess, like some fundamental base case that you had on Bitcoin that enabled you to hold through, you know, for 10 years?
I think we were pretty rational and pretty smart about not putting more money in than we could afford to lose or would really disrupt our lives in any sort of meaningful way, right? So I see that mistake a lot, actually, amongst some Bitcoiners, and partly it's because they get their timing wrong more than anything. But if you overextend yourself, right? So I don't know, Bitcoin's been pumping for a while. Would I suggest it's wise for someone to go and take like a big fiat loan now and try and buy Bitcoin thinking, well, you know, once it doubles in price, that'll pay off the loan, plus I'll end up with more Bitcoin. You know, hey, man, listen, Bitcoin often drops like 30, 50, sometimes 80%. Now, I'm not suggesting that that might be around the corner. Who knows? I'm not into making price predictions. But if you really have this long-term time horizon that we all bang on about constantly, then you probably shouldn't be introducing that much leverage. Now, look, you know, if you're a super wealthy guy and you've got a bit of money that you can speculate with and you know, you want to be a little mini Michael Saylor, right? And try and take on some cheap debt and buy some Bitcoin, then, you know, if you can service that debt and make it work, then listen, I'm not going to be the guy to tell you not to do it. It's up to you. But for most people, the real benefit of Bitcoin or the real realization you get is that you can build a life on it, right? And probably the least stressful way to do that is to not over leverage yourself. Like definitely don't over leverage, but maybe not leverage at all. You know, the compound annual growth rate of Bitcoin is ridiculous. You know, if you could save even 10, 20% of your income for 5 or 10 years, it can completely change your financial situation. So when you've got a deal on the table that is that good, right? And like in my mind, pretty much a lock, right? Guaranteed, Bitcoin is going to rise in purchasing power versus the dollar. You want to be careful not to try and be too cute and outsmart yourself. And look, this is where you know you've gone too far. If you've got to a point where, you know, some emergency spend comes in, your car breaks down or something, that you're going to be forced to sell your Bitcoin, then you probably are overextended, right? Because if your car breaks down at the same time that Bitcoin has tanked 60%, all of a sudden you might be selling your Bitcoin for a loss. And now we're kind of, now we're losing money on the best performing asset of the last 15 years. If you're losing money on Bitcoin, there's got to be something wrong. Yeah, I mean, we can all draw charts from 2011, right? And it's some savage dips. But you know, don't try and overcomplicate this, because I've seen so many people get caught out that way.
Yeah, I think an emergency savings account and fiat is probably a prudent thing to have, even if your savings for wealth creation is in Bitcoin. Do you recall, were you and your dad like talking about what you were going to do with your Bitcoin, like dreaming about how you were going to use it, like as you hodled?
Oh man, for sure. I mean,
what were those dreams?
You know, oh boy, memories. No, listen, I'm not like a flashy guy, right? So like Bitcoin could go to silly money. I really love cars, by the way. I really love like driving fast and all that sort of stuff. I'm more interested in driving fast than I am like the badge of a car, right? And maybe if Bitcoin had gone to $1 million a coin and I had 25 million, I'm never going to tell you I would never buy a Lambo. But I am still the type of guy that if I were to buy a Lambo, I'd be going on Auto Trader looking for one that's 10 years old, picking it up for 40 grand and thinking I can drive this for a year and sell it. It might cost me 10 grand to have a bit of fun, right? I'm not like, you know, I really like experiences and living life. And maybe that would be like a car, but it would be, I don't want to own something that loses that much value. The debate between property and Bitcoin is a really fascinating one. And I know we'll divide maybe a lot of opinions. But, you know, one of the things I really wanted to do was upgrade my lifestyle in terms of where I lived. And also, you know, my style of living and the environment I was in. You know, I'm a big believer that the environment you're in can affect your outlook, your mood, your productivity, and all sorts of great things, right? So I did have dreams of maybe buying my dream house and that sort of thing, knowing that it would go down in value against Bitcoin and all that stuff. But, you know, a bit of peace in your life, a bit of structure and the ability to build a family and a home, I think has some value that is, you know, hard to capture on a spreadsheet. That doesn't mean to say I'd ever buy rental properties instead of Bitcoin, because that is stupid, right? So like, let's separate those two things. But genuinely, man, here's maybe the most sort of tragic thing about this story is that I'm that meme guy. Like, I was the meme, right? Like, I lived in a very cheap place. I lived in a city in Scotland called Dundee, which is actually the drugs capital of Europe. Lovely place. You should definitely visit. So I was living there for a while, and I was huddling hard, man. Like, I was delaying my gratification to an extent that most people probably wouldn't be comfortable with and wouldn't be willing to do. And I was doing that, you know, in hopes of creating a different future, to sort of leapfrog where I was to somewhere completely different. So, man, to have all of that ripped up in front of you is a really sort of savage experience. It's not just the money. It's all the pain you went through hodling for 10 years through all the bullshit. You know, it's also, after 10 years, Bitcoin, I'm sure you've recognized this in yourself, Bitcoin becomes part of your personality, right? Almost, and part of your identity. So rip that away from someone and it leaves you in a very weird sort of vacuum of like, what the fuck is going on, right? So an extremely difficult thing to go through. Here's one thing I will share, right? That again, I'm going to get in trouble because I'm going to suggest maybe you use some of your Bitcoin or sell it. But here's something I would do different if I could go back. Is, look, you know, we were sitting on millions of dollars, right? And I was huddling. I was the most diamond hand, psychopath, go down with the ship. Like, I'm all in, right? Don't talk to me about diamond hands. You have no idea, right? So that was me. But if I was going to do it again, I've realized that I was huddling so hard that I hadn't recognized that actually Bitcoin is not the most scarce asset. The most scarce asset is your time. And I was delaying my gratification, but I perhaps went a little bit too far. You know, the trips I didn't go on, the holidays I didn't take, the experiences that I maybe delayed. A lot of those things could have been possible, and we had a decent stack of Bitcoin, right? So I could have definitely tipped a few things off the bucket list without really putting a significant dent in. It's a tricky one because, you know, the other side of it is every time I did sell a little Bitcoin, like when I was a bit younger, right, my income was really low, like my exhaust fell off my car and I was forced to sell some Bitcoin to replace it. And then you realize, you know, 5 years later, God damn, that exhaust was 30 grand or something, right? Like that also gets drilled into your head and can sometimes make you lose sight of the fact that look, Bitcoin's money and it's great to make money, right? But it is not the main purpose of life. Like you're meant to enjoy the journey along the way. So I've got a slightly different approach to Bitcoin. Yes, I'm trying to stack it. Yes, I've got some serious diamond hands. Like I know that. I'm not worried about any dips. But I'm also going to live a little, right? Don't live in the future too much would be my advice on that one.
Yeah, I think that is incredible advice. I was actually reading something that Lynn Alden had wrote a while back. Just in the last couple of days, and she was talking about how she's not a frugal person, but she's very thoughtful about, like, she's to her, like, she's like, I drive an old car. I just need something safely to get me from point A to point B, but I will spend on travel experiences. I'll stay in luxury hotels. And like, those are memories that are going to last a lifetime and experiences that I can take with me. And I think that's really important. It's very easy to get caught up in the Bitcoin memes. And the problem is I think a lot of those people make the memes and then they go live a normal life, but there's someone on the receiving end of those memes who's buying into the lie. And they think that the whole point of life is to accumulate as much Bitcoin as possible. And I think it is important to be accumulating Bitcoin. Like that is the best form of savings. But if you get to your deathbed and you never did anything because your whole goal, like you can't take it with you, you know? And I think a lot of people miss that.
Yeah, my wife's ecstatic, right? Because now I have underwear without holes in. I wear comfy socks.
So fancy.
You know, I shave, I've got razors and stuff. I don't look like some crazy hobo. So yeah, you know, like most things in life, a bit of balance definitely doesn't hurt. So like, it was painful to have all that ripped away, especially when I delayed so much gratification. But some serious lessons were learned, and hey man, you just got to keep on trucking. Like, what else can you do, really?
Yeah. So after the hack, like, what was your lowest point? Like, what do you remember? I mean, I can only imagine the devastation in that moment, but as it sunk in and you began to realize this, like, what you had, your diamond hands had been for nothing to this point. Like, what was that trough?
Oh man, it's really hard to explain. You know, I knew what I was holding. I knew where Bitcoin was going. So I had just started sort of treating myself a little bit to not buying things, but getting some time back to go and pursue the things that I was interested in, and things that I was excited about that didn't necessarily need to have like a monetary reward attached to them, or could have a really long payoff, right? So weirdly enough, like, I was really into woodworking. Like, I've got this weird little obsession with woodworking. Like, there's something about the lack of screens and the feel of the wood, and you just kind of get lost in the process of what you're trying to build and things like that, right? It's really nice. So I thought, you know what, believe it or not, I was thinking I'm going to get really good at woodworking over like the next 5 years. And then I'm going to start producing like Bitcoin related woodworking items. Like, you know, like maybe a nice like giant dining room table with like those little blocks in from the mempool. Like, how cool would that be, right? And I was going to call it proof of woodwork and everything. It was going to be amazing, right? So I was off doing that, and so I found myself very quickly in a position where my entire stack was gone. Like, and you know, I was 95% of the way all in, right? Just had kind of living expenses, my Bitcoin and the property I was living in. So yeah, wow, I'm in a serious situation now, right? Like, I've got to figure this out, turn this around real fast. So I was determined to finish. I was on a woodworking course. This is another story for another time. I was on a woodworking course at a local college, right? And I was like this mature student surrounded by like 18-year-old Scottish lads. I've got some crazy stories to tell you one day about that experience. But anyway, I was determined to finish this course. My advice, by the way, would be if you have any woodworking stuff you need to get it done now, because the next generation of woodworkers are not going to be able to help you. Anyway, that's an aside. So yeah, how did it affect me? Well, mostly I had to just really, it's important to me to pick myself up quickly, because I understand, like, if I go down some dark tunnel, I'm gonna take everyone around me with me, like, you know, my wife, my family, my dad especially, after what had happened. So yeah, you just kind of get busy, right? First order of business, sell my property immediately, right? Like, I have a mortgage to pay. I don't have a serious income at the moment, and my stack is gone. So what am I going to do? I'm going to sell my property, get rid of that. That was kind of funny, man, because I needed to move quickly, right? But I don't really like sales guys. I don't really like middlemen. So I thought, I'm not waiting for an estate agent to charge me $2,000 to take some pictures and put this place on a website. So I flew down to a property investment network, found my own buyer, sold the property in like 3 weeks. It was gone, deal done, got the money. Here's the funny bit. Well, it's maybe not funny. It wasn't at the time, but like, so I took all that money, slammed it straight back into Bitcoin. At about 70 grand, something like that, 70,000 US. And then by 2 weeks later, it's at like 50. At this point, man, I'm not even upset. I'm just laughing about it. Maybe it's like a British sense of humor, like gallows humor, right? But like, you've got to laugh. Like, what? This is just funny. I felt like Jim Cramer, the ultimate counter indicator, right? like you see, like, I got hacked maybe like 4 weeks later, the price had doubled, and then I bought back in, and then the price like dropped 20%. I was just like, come on, give me a chance here. Anyway, whatever. I wasn't too worried about that. It's all a long-term thing. But yeah, there were some low points, man. You know, I tried to hide it a lot from other people. Probably my lowest point was, you know, I used to spend maybe like extra long showers, just kind of vacant, just under the water, like, man, like trying to process it. It's a lot of information to deal with. And the lowest point is like, man, I remember it. Like, I felt broken. I was like rubbing my head, fucking clumps of hair coming out in my hand. You know, the stress, man, was insane. You know, I'm dealing with, you know, police in various jurisdictions. They want to know my proof of funds. I'm trying to dig out multi-bit wallets from 10 years ago and find all these transactions. At the same time, I'm trying to sell this property, figure out where I'm going to live. And I've also reached out to the Bitcoin way, say, hey, guys, like, can I write your newsletter? And I'm also trying to finish this woodworking course because I hate not finishing things, right? So I was like, I'm finishing that course. Like, this hack has not taken that away from me. Like, I'm finishing the woodworking course. So, yeah, an extreme period of my life. And, yeah, man, the advice I give anyone, you don't want to go through it. You really, really don't want to go through it because in those really dark moments, yeah, it's not a lot of fun.
I can't imagine. Could you maybe talk a little bit about the process? Like, who did you call? What authorities did you call? Like, I don't even know how you go about something like this. If I lost all my Bitcoin tomorrow, I have no idea how I would think about trying to recover it, you know, like through those mechanisms.
Well, weirdly enough, like I can't say too much about this because I was very, very fortunate, right? Like, the best decision I made was sharing it on Twitter, right? And it just went completely viral, right? This crazy video that I put out. And then loads of people, you know, were doing chain analysis and sending me transaction graphs and trying to help me figure out what was going on. And the post ended up getting millions and millions of views, right? And I'm not, I'm a heavy Twitter user now. I'm in marketing at the Bitcoin way, right? But I was never a particularly heavy user before, right? Like, I'd post once in a blue moon, right? I was just sitting there huddling, enjoying myself. But that post went viral. It was totally caught me off guard. And actually, a police department in another jurisdiction reached out to me. This was the weirdest thing. So they'd seen my thing on Twitter and reached out over DM. Like, and I'm getting inundated, by the way, with scammers at this point offering to help me, right? But there's loads of them. But anyway, I figured out that and verified that this was a legit like organization. I'm not going to mention where they're from because actually they kind of went a little bit out of their way helping me where they shouldn't because I wasn't part of their jurisdiction. But here's an interesting thing. Like, one of these policemen was a Bitcoiner who's on Bitcoin Twitter and he saw the story and he's like, fuck, you know, and he's got mad. Like, the police, they got pretty crazy. Like, you'll have all heard of like chain analysis tools and this and like, yeah, so they reached out and, you know, then at some point I got in touch with Police Action Fraud, I think it's called in the UK, and had a case. And, oh, man, it was wild, you know. I can maybe share some interesting things about, you know, some of my funds were coin joined using Wasabi Wallet. And I was surprised to see, actually, that the police were maybe a little bit better at trying to demix those sorts of transactions than I thought they might be and de-anonymize them. I want to be careful what I say here, right? Because I've done a little digging into that and I'm by no means an expert, miles away from one, in fact. But as I understand it, chain analysis is pretty imperfect. It relies a lot on heuristics, right? Like, there's a strong likelihood that this wallet is linked to this wallet, for example, but I think if I understand it correctly, they never really have definitive binary true or false proof. But nonetheless, I think the point is, you know, the police are not as incapable as I think people realize, but they're also not that amazing either. You know, there were certain things that when we were talking to them, maybe they didn't understand about Bitcoin either. So, yeah, I just got really lucky that the community reached out. Loads of people were helping me. Shout out to the guys at Samurai Wallet as well. You know, their man Ergo BTC was extremely helpful through that process. People like Luke Dashier reached out. You know, Tony at the Bitcoin Way reached out. I ended up in loads of great conversations, and you know, it was actually those conversations with a bunch of Bitcoiners that pulled me out of the hole very quickly, out of those dark moments, and made me think, right, come on, you got to get back on the horse. You know, I'm still very cognizant of the fact that, you know, Bitcoin's nowhere near done, and I do not have the time to sit and lick my wounds for 12 months. Right? Like, Bitcoin's not going to wait for me just because I've hit a bump in the road. So, you know, a really big thank you to everyone who sort of just said, come on, Rick, right? People sending me hardware wallets, like, come on, Rick, get your setup back. Let's go, let's go. So, yeah, the best thing to do is avoid it, because I don't think it's particularly easy to try and track down your funds.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't sound like it. And we, you know, like we, I had Chase on the podcast recently, another similar story. I mean, he lost his seed phrase. But what I've witnessed is something pretty cool. And I'm reluctant to call it the Bitcoin community, because we are from all over the place. We disagree on as many things as we agree on, it seems sometimes. But there really is sort of a community vibe that it's fun to see a group of people who are like-minded, at least on the best form of money, who will come around and help, you know, and send some sats, provide services, you know, whatever it needs to be. So I'm glad to hear that. What would you say is like your biggest, I want people to have like a tangible takeaway from you. I mean, besides this story, you've been around a long time. You've seen it all, many cycles now. What's your takeaway from the experience? What sort of practical guidance would you give people in light of what you now know?
Wow. Yeah, so much to sort of unpack from 10 years. I think here's a few things maybe I've noticed, right? You shouldn't have heroes, and you should be careful which influencers you follow. Because the one thing Bitcoin teaches us is that incentives really matter, right? Incentives are what make Bitcoin work in the first place, right? This very carefully orchestrated set of incentives that keeps everyone on the network honest. But understand that anybody operating outside of the network, and that goes for, you know, companies, it goes for influencers, it goes for politicians, everyone, right? They're all acting under all sorts of disparate incentives that might not necessarily be in your interest. So one thing I've seen over the years is, you know, big names and big voices sort of rise and fall consistently in Bitcoin. And often when they fall, they take a lot of people with them, right? So, you know, it's going to get noisy out there during a bull run. So, you know, here's the thing. It's really easy to waste your most precious resource, which is your time, because we're all guilty of this, I think, to a certain extent, is listening to the latest macro podcast, right? Or some other plan B and plan C and plan G has come out with a new model telling you that Bitcoin's going to go to the moon and how quickly, and there's nice plots on the graph and all of this. Well, great. Yeah, the price chart for Bitcoin is going to go up and to the right. That's my model. That's all you need to know, right? It really is. And where you should invest your time maybe more wisely is actually getting better at using Bitcoin. That's the mistake we made. You know, I wouldn't say I was a total noob. I could sit there and explain to you what multisig is. You know, I know what private, we're pretty savvy, right? We used Bitcoin for a long time, but we weren't cybersecurity professionals. We'd never really faced this challenge of protecting critical data before. And I think people underestimate just how, well, you know, there's experts in this field for a reason. You know, governments and big companies spend millions of dollars on it every year for a reason. So, you know, you have to take it really seriously. If you want to be your own bank, you got to be the head of security. God, what else have I learned over the last 10 years? To try and tune out the hype. I mean, we were having a laugh before this podcast started, right? Because I think they said today at 10 a.m., Senator Loomis was going to announce the Bitcoin reserve. Then that didn't happen. But don't worry, because 15 minutes later, there's new news that Trump is about to have a phone call with Nayib Bukele. Let's send it. Right. Here's the thing. If you're getting really drawn into this, like where you think a phone call is going to suddenly teleport Bitcoin to 300K, I don't know what to tell you. You know, you may be spending your time in the wrong places. There's nothing wrong with it, but it's just entertainment at the end of the day. I think what you've got to do is realize you've got to take your own journey with this stuff, right? Like you've got to invest in yourself. No one's coming to save you. Your influencer doesn't really care about your outcomes. The only one who does is you. So nothing wrong with listening to a few podcasts, but if you're doing that and cheering on, you know, Michael Saylor or cheering on some announcement about a Bitcoin reserve, but you don't yet know things like how to use a hardware wallet, how to back up your seed phrase, or, you know, UTXO management, or, you know, these sorts of things. If you can't confidently do those, then I would argue you probably don't have the time to worry about what Michael Saylor's doing or what Larry Fink is doing, because he sure as shit's not worrying about you.
Yeah, that is... So I think two important takeaways that you just provided. So one, and one that I'm completely guilty of, is not spending enough time becoming proficient with the technology of Bitcoin, right? Like hardware wallet recovery, sending transactions, like just doing those things. You know, I think I've got UTXO management down, but like there are a lot of things, and I think many people sit on it and forget and miss out on, you know, when you're your own bank, there's responsibility that even extends beyond cybersecurity, which is obviously crucial, but just operations. Like, do you know how to use the thing, and can you do it in, you know, when you need to? So that's a good wake up call. And yeah, the second, I couldn't agree more. And I think I've seen so much of this just in the last few years of me being in Bitcoin, because I got into Bitcoin in 2022 when everything was blowing up. And then I saw like the hopium around Saylor, and now some of the comments he's come, like if you listen to early Saylor versus Saylor today, I mean, it's, you know, I think he still has the there is no second best sort of mentality, but he talks about Bitcoin in a very different way, and it's very it's like a more tightly controlled narrative that seems like government friendly or something. And like, if he's been your savior all along, you know, your Bitcoin hero, you're going to be led down a path that is no longer freedom money, and it's kind of this something else. And I think people have done the same thing with Trump. Like I'm not black pilled on Trump. I think he's already in the first few days of his presidency done some very good things, some executive orders that have been signed. But he launched a meme coin. World Liberty Fi bought wrapped Bitcoin and a bunch of other shit coins. It's like, but because people get tribalistic and they put those heroes on a pedestal, it's like, you know, they can't readily unwind from those very public positions that they've stated, you know? And so they end up like drinking the Kool-Aid on things. I think that's prudent advice. And so what was at one time signal very quickly becomes noise as like this band of followers starts just spewing whatever the new talk track is. You know, I mean, just Bitcoin is a savings vehicle. And if you just save your money in Bitcoin and try bringing on friends and family as they're willing to listen, I think that's the win. You know, we'll defeat central banking if we just deliver that message maybe a little more punctually and prudently. I don't know if you have any comment on that.
Yeah, I you know, I'm not overly worried about what Michael Saylor's doing or what spin he wants to put on Bitcoin, because the beauty of Bitcoin is that it's open to everyone, right, to interpret and use how they see fit. So Michael Saylor might think it's a great idea to give your Bitcoin to a bank and use it as collateral for a loan. Personally, that's not for me. And one thing that I've learned over the years in Bitcoin is that every time I've seen someone deposit their Bitcoin to get a loan or try and earn some yield on it, it doesn't always work out so well. So, you know, you want to take those risks and play those games. It's similar to people taking on leverage to buy Bitcoin, right? That's totally fine. It's up to you. But I think it would be nice to see the pendulum swing back towards the idea that you're the bank, right? You are the bank and you have this total control over your money. It was always about being self-sovereign, and I think it still can be. You know, people argue all the time, okay, well, but with Bitcoin, not everybody in the future is going to be able to own UTXOs, right? And that may well be true, but I don't really worry too much about that because you can own a UTXO now. Right. So, you know, understand that a lot of these debates as well can be quite theoretical in nature. You know, my advice would be like, can you own a UTXO now? Yes. Are you in a position to take ownership fully over your money and learn how it works? And, you know, there is nothing that a third party or custodian can offer you that you can't do yourself with Bitcoin. And my pitch to people would be that the benefits of learning how to do it yourself are enormous. Right? You reduce your counterparty risk to zero. You have money that's totally uncensorable. You can send it around the world instantly. You can leave your home country and all your wealth travels with you. You know, it's not so easy to do that with things like MicroStrategy shares, ETF shares, all that sort of stuff, right? I don't know, you know, maybe your money's wrapped up in a pension and the only place you're allowed to put it is ETF shares. Okay, so I understand that decision as well to a certain extent. But you've just got to figure out like what you're trying to get out of this. And I think it's very easy to get led astray. Maybe you shouldn't be following a Michael Saylor strategy of taking on debt to buy Bitcoin. Maybe that's not good for your circumstances, right? So I don't know. I think Bitcoin taught me it's all about independence and sort of personal responsibility. And I think maybe now more than ever, people outsource a lot more of their thinking than they used to.
Yeah, that's my sense. And obviously, I wasn't around in the early days, but it sure seems like it. And the noise to signal ratio just seems to be getting higher and higher. So talk to me a bit about how you found the Bitcoin way. How did you and Tony get connected after your hack?
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, listen, I'm over here trying to engineer like some sort of comeback if I can manage it, right? So, you know, Tony very kindly was one of the people who reached out to me while I was still in El Salvador with my dad trying to figure out what the hell is going on. And, you know, it occurred to me a couple of weeks later, I was like, hang on, damn, right, okay. So, look, I'm a sort of not natural storyteller, sort of marketing guy, right? And it did occur to me like, you know, maybe after 3 million, 4 million views on Twitter, like, hang on a minute, I can maybe turn this to my advantage a little bit, right? And hey, why the hell not, right? Like, if you can turn a defeat into a win somehow, then you absolutely should do that. So I figured, hey, I'm the best case study for getting your self-custody right that probably there could be right now. So I'm thinking, hang on a minute. So I thought, well, listen, I'll give Tony a bell. And didn't have much to pitch him other than, hey man, like I'm good at marketing, right? There's got to be something I can do, right? There's got to be some way I can work with you on this perfect case study. Like, how do we leverage the story and try and convince some people to take their security setup better? And it just kind of went from there. You know, I did a couple of talks at a few places around the UK, and then started writing their newsletter like once a week. I think I'm about sort of 55. Newsletters deep at this point every week or something. Is kind of wild. I tried to add up the other day how many words I'd written, and it must be getting close to 250,000 words or something, right? I feel like I've practically like written a book. But yeah, man, I mean, you know, one thing that's helped me is being busy, right? Being busy, getting hungry again. Like, how do I build that stack back up? Like, you know, I've in a weird way, man, like I've got a bit more fire in my belly than maybe I did when I had my whole stack. So that's an interesting outcome. And things just kept getting better and better from there, right? So, you know, I made sure I really wanted to send it every single time with this newsletter. So, you know, I don't just do like a cheeky news roundup or try and write something interesting for our readers, you know, and try and write something worth reading. The open rates were really good. You know, we're consistently over 50%. So buzzing about that. And the list went from 400 to like, I think we're over 3,000 now in pretty short order. So I was just hyped about that. Then did the talk in Prague. And then very soon after that, I think we both joined the company about the same time, right? Tasked with, yeah, growing the company and pushing the marketing side. And it's been a blast, man. Like, yeah, in 6 months, we've more than doubled the Twitter followers, impressions are through the roof. Working on YouTube with you's been like wicked fun as well. Like, one of my favorite things is trying to come up with those funny thumbnails that get people to click on YouTube. Maybe this week's episode will be me like crying or something with an empty wallet. I don't know. And it's just been great, you know, like just absolutely trying to send it, right? Like I'm trying to build some sort of comeback. And I'm trying to do it on a Bitcoin standard as well, because I think it's a cheat code, right? So I don't know. I have this stupid idea in my head that like I lost all my Bitcoin in 2023. If an idiot like me can make it from scratch from that point and build a nice stack and succeed, then I think anybody can do it. And the only thing in your way is you, right? Like get busy. Every job is a Bitcoin job because you can buy Bitcoin with your wages, right? Every job is a Bitcoin job. So, you know, oh man, it's been great. Like YouTube, I think we're up to what? Like a 2,500 sort of subscribers now and stuff. So it's been amazing. And you know, I love our audience as well. I really appreciate everyone sort of signing in, all the funny comments on YouTube and stuff. Yeah, it's been a great experience. And then we launched the new website on January 3rd as well, which was a nice touch, right? Because that's the same launch day as Bitcoin. And yeah, we had some fun out in Greece, right? Like we got to meet up in Greece and stuff. So man, it's a whole lot of fun. And I'm really passionate about making sure other people don't have the same experience as me. So it's weird, man. It's weird. You know, like you do kind of find yourself, I find myself sitting here thinking, wow, now my job is to be marketing the importance of getting yourself custody right. Like, you know, was I meant to be put into this position? Did weird things happen for a reason, right? Here we are, and hopefully we'll go strength to strength. So yeah, it's been a crazy journey with the Bitcoin way, but a whole lot of fun.
It's been incredible. And I'll just say for myself, it's I think what I really love about it, besides just, you know, I love the team, I love you guys, but you and Tony both have these stories that I think resonate with so many people, and the passion and enthusiasm for what we're trying to do is it's just through the roof. You know, I mean, I think a lot of companies in the Bitcoin space, and not to knock them, but you know, they've come up with a clever idea to help you do something with Bitcoin or to improve in, you know, some incremental way. But at the Bitcoin way, it's all about the fundamentals. It's like back to the basics of Bitcoin and doing it right. No compromising, no shortcuts. And it's, for me, I think it's just been such a good reminder of the promise of Bitcoin, you know? I mean, it's so easy to get, again, all the noise, it's so easy to get distracted, but you have the opportunity not only to save, you know, historically, at least at a very high compound annual growth rate, but to do it yourself and to take ownership and to learn new skills. And it's just an unbelievable ride that we've been on. And then I'll say too, for you, man, before we round out, I got one more question for you. But I think, you know, like, you know, historically I'm sort of I was sort of raised in a traditional conservative type home. And I would say until, you know, the last few years, I was probably just a Republican guy. You know, I got my guns and I want my freedom and everything, go America. And as I've sort of rounded the corner on libertarianism, you in particular, but you and the team have been just incredibly helpful to me as I bring in some of my old bad habits of thinking, you know, that you question and push on things and kind of get out those, you know, some of the final head trash that I have in my legacy, you know, America only, we're the good guys. Sort of mode that I was in for the first, you know, 30 something years of my life. So major thank you to you. Rick, this has been a lot of fun. I was joking with you before we started recording. I always ask what's an unpopular opinion that you hold, and you get bonus points if you piss off some Bitcoiners. I almost feel like with you, I need to ask you if there's a popular opinion that you hold because I only know all of your unpopular opinions, but you can answer either way.
An unpopular opinion. Fool. You know what? Here's one. No one's saving the dollar, right? Like, I'll be really explicit about this. I would much rather have President Trump be the Prime Minister of the UK than Keir Starmer, right? Big improvement from the Democrat Party. I like a lot of what he had to say in the inauguration speech. It seems like the pendulum is swinging back toward free speech and all this stuff that I'm a big fan of, right? Excellent news. However, Donald Trump, I don't think can like, no one's paying that debt off. I don't see a way in which somehow Bitcoin saves the dollar, or the US can adopt Bitcoin and then use it to somehow get out of this debt trap. The only way out of that debt trap, in my mind, is that the dollar becomes completely worthless, and so the debt is almost kind of irrelevant. I think Bitcoin might actually hasten its demise rather than sort of slow it down. I mean, think about it. Donald Trump suddenly says, right, we're buying Bitcoin. Bitcoin's the best money. I mean, surely the rest of the world wakes up and goes, holy shit, we've got to dump the dollar, right? The Americans don't even want the dollar. So, yeah, I don't know. I think there's like some real confusion there about what's going on. Like Bitcoin is the evolution of money. It's the next upgrade. It's the next step forward. You know, we went from shells to feathers to gold and, you know, so on. Bitcoin's here to replace the dollar. It's not here to sort of shore it up or just act as gold and be a stable backing for it. I'm sure that's what the government would like, because let's not be coy about it. The government definitely don't want to give up that powerful money printer. So I believe the rhetoric will be along the lines of, yeah, we should use Bitcoin to back the dollar or something other, but don't get fooled into that, right? Like, the dollar's dead. Run away from it. Get out of it. There's no president that could be elected that's going to save it, in my opinion.
I think that's a good unpopular opinion. I'm sure there are people who agree with you, and I think probably more hardline Bitcoiners would agree. Probably a lot of people who are excited about Senator Lummis and a strategic Bitcoin reserve, they think that somehow things are going to continue, business is going to continue as usual. We're just going to somehow use Bitcoin. I don't know exactly what they think. But right now I'm reading a book called Currency Wars. I don't know if you've ever read that one. It's a great primer on the last hundreds or so years of basically the devaluation of currencies and countries fighting non-kinetically. And they were talking about after World War One, the author was talking that after World War One, they'd inflated the money supply, and so the peg to gold was completely broken, right? And they had two options. And their first option was they could try to suck liquidity out of the system and repeg to gold as they had. And I think England went that direction, and it just devastated the economy. The others just devalued their currency because it was the path of least resistance. And so suddenly, you know, the value of gold spikes and whatever their fiat was. And I think we're at a stage in the game where it's hard for you to be wrong about your opinion, because I don't think anyone has the courage and the audacity to suck liquidity out of the system the way it was in the, I guess, late 20s, 30s in England, and devastate the economy as it would need to be. The solution's going to be devalue into oblivion. And I think the question is just, when does it literally become worthless, right? Because you can still go buy your groceries today, even though you buy a lot less groceries. But no one's got the political courage to do what needs to be done. Even if they did, the solution is it would be devastating for some period of time. So yeah, I don't think you're off.
Yeah, I mean, you kind of hit the nail on the head. I don't think it's, you know, I'm not attacking Trump at all. I'm saying that I don't think anyone can control this anymore. I think the die is cast, right? $36 trillion in debt, $200 trillion in unfunded liabilities. This ball is rolling downhill now, and it's only going to go one way. Like you say, they're going to have a choice: either print money or default. The US is not going to default. They're going to print money. So, this kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. It's like, play your own game. Don't, you know, will Trump be a good president for America? Well, yeah, it seems like that could be a great result for America. But you do have to look out for your own interests. Right, you really, really do, because, you know, the president's not going to be able to solve the money problem single-handedly, because the numbers are just out of control. So stop waiting for someone to save you. No one's coming to save you. You have to save yourself. You have to become your own hero in a way, right? And recognize what's going on here and make sure that you're well positioned for this potential future. Now, you might not be as crazy as me and be like, right, I don't want any dollars, Bitcoin only and all this, but I mean, if you're sitting there with a 0% allocation, that's absolutely wild. And I also think if you're leaving your Bitcoin with a custodian, because now everything will be nice and safe and hunky-dory because there's a Bitcoin, arguably a Bitcoin president in power. I think, again, that's a mistake. You know, all the banks are going to come out, offer you custody solutions, all of this. Got to do your own thing. You've got to do your own thing because the list of exchanges and custodians that have gone under is so long. It's so long. Like, I've forgotten most of the ones that have fallen over, right? I have to go and look them up again. So yeah, don't fall into that trap. Like, I find it really weird that people would get super excited about the state buying Bitcoin when the whole point of Bitcoin is to separate money and state. If it were up to me, which of course it's not, I would much sooner see the plebs go and buy up all the remaining supply as quickly as possible and front run their government, because I believe in small governments, less interference in our private lives. So I don't really get why people are celebrating. I'm not celebrating. I hope they don't announce a strategic Bitcoin reserve, because I lost my Bitcoin only fucking 18 months ago, right? And I'm still trying to stack here. So if Trump could take his time, continue splashing around with his stupid shit coins, that is tickety-boo for me. I mean, that's absolutely perfect.
Yeah.
But I hope people don't follow down that path, because they will. There's a good chance they'll get wrecked.
Yeah, no, you're right. I think the saddest thing about our financial situation today is I think it's very easy to just blame politicians. But the reality is that a guy like Ron Paul, who I don't think should be everyone's hero, but like, he ran for president. Like, we had an opportunity to have someone in there and go clean house. And like, I don't even know what small percentage of the Republican vote he got, you know, when he was running. But the reality is it's our own ignorance that has led us to this. You know, politicians are to some extent doing the things that we vote for them to do. And none of them are talking about ending the Fed and stopping the money printer and cutting, you know, social and welfare programs. Like, it's politically unpopular because the voters are a bunch of idiots who don't understand that stuff. Like, you pick up a book, it becomes very clear who the people you don't want in office are. And it's everyone that we vote for. I'll give you a hint if you're listening, you know? So,
the politicians are going to keep doing what politicians do. You know, I want to go back to a world where the only thing the politicians are responsible for is fixing potholes, keeping the roads working, you know, like just menial jobs, right? That's all they're here for. But because of the money printer, they've become so large that they interfere. You know, they don't only do the things you ask them to do, they do a whole load of other shit that you really didn't ask them to do, right? Interfering with your life, messing with everything, telling you how to talk, telling you how to think, telling you what's acceptable or not acceptable behavior, constantly interfering with you. Yeah, look, you know, politicians are going to continue to do that. They're going to continue to be wed to the money printer, because the only way they can enforce policies that you don't vote for is because they've got a money printer to do it. So hopefully Bitcoin brings in a world where, dare I say it, no one cares who the president of the US is, because it's just an administrative job with limited powers, clear parameters of what they can and can't do, rather than maybe some showbiz character who's going to be your talisman and flag bearer, who has this kind of like weird, you know, politics has moved into this crazy place where they're no longer public servants, they're leaders. And I think Trump might be a better leader than the ones we've seen previously. But I would really like us to get to a place where they're just public servants again. And you say, listen, man, Trump, my bin was picked up late again. What's going on over there, right? Rather than having things dictated to us. I think the balance of power is topsy-turvy, but we'll have to see. That's my biggest hope.
Yeah, man. Well, I think that's a good place to wrap up. I think that should be the hope of just about everyone. I can tell you our lives would be fundamentally changed if we could get back to a place of smaller and smaller government and personal responsibility. So, Rick, thanks for the time, man. Why don't you give a handoff? Where can people find you? Tell them to go to the Bitcoin Way. I mean, anything you want to share?
Sure, yeah. Well, yeah, like, this is just a plug for us now, right? But yeah, you can find me on Twitter @rmesser. You can also, well, look, you know, here's a mistake I would go back and change, is I would have got in touch with someone to learn more about self-custody, because yeah, like, sometimes you might hear, and sometimes you might even see in the comment sections of our videos, people say, why would you pay for someone to teach you self-custody? You can learn all this stuff online. Well, that's true. You can also go to MIT and take astrophysics online, but you might find some things don't come that naturally to you. And also, it's worth mentioning that, look, if you want to get better at golf, you hire a golf pro. You want to learn karate, you go and get a sensei or whatever, right? So investing in getting better at the skills that mean you're going to protect your money for the rest of your life, hey, call me crazy, but, you know, it might be worth investing a little bit of your money into doing that. So go and check out thebitcoinway.com. Follow us on Twitter. And keep watching the YouTube channel. I can't tell you, like, if you want to help me on this comeback, like, likes, comments, subscribes, all of that stuff is how I'm measured. So, yeah, do me a favor. Help me get my Bitcoin back.
Me too, man. Awesome. Rick, thank you so much for the time, brother.
Thanks, Michael.
And that's a wrap. Again, I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Rick. I absolutely love Rick and really appreciate him taking time to share his story so that way everyone can benefit from his learning experience and his many years in Bitcoin. Do him a favor, go follow him on X. He's got great content. He's also the man behind the Bitcoin Way memes. So check out the Bitcoin Way. We're at the Bitcoin Way _. You can follow me there as well at the other M Jordan. And of course, if you need help with proper Bitcoin self-custody, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to help you out. There is one right way to do this with zero counterparty risk. We can walk you through the process step by step. We also help with online privacy, privacy phones. We have a Plan B residency option as well for all of your self-sovereignty needs. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Until next time, remember, stay safe, stay sovereign, and remember, the yield on Bitcoin is freedom.